Hello and welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 category smart. This is Jessie Colhagen, and you're listening to the Life Note, Simplicity Parenting, using the extraordinary power of less to raise calmer, happier, and more secure kids, by Kim John Payne and Lisa M. Ross, and summarized by Emily Snyder. As always, we'll begin with a quote. Parents can bring fresh inspiration and attention to the flow of family life. Without a doubt, as the family's architects, we can add a little more space and grace, a little less speed and clutter to our children's lives daily. It's hard to argue with the fact that childhood today is different than it used to be. Society is bigger, faster, and busier. There's too much stuff, too many distractions, and not enough time. Kids can get anxious, become overwhelmed, have trouble in school, and as a result, even develop behavioral problems. In Simplicity Parenting, internationally recognized family consultant Kim John Payne shows parents how to reclaim childhood for their kids with four layers of simplicity. The first big thought is, why simplify? Powerful incentive. Quote, "When you simplify a child's world, you prepare the way for positive change and growth." End quote. Payne opens this chapter with a story about an 8-year-old named James. His parents were worried about him having trouble sleeping at night and his complaints about stomach aches. They were proud of how confidently James could interact with adults, but were concerned by his inability to connect with peers his own age. The parents were avid news watchers, and CNN was pretty much always on, even if only in the background. James's awareness of major world issues was great for his age, and his understanding of global warming rivaled Al Gore's. But despite his advanced intellect, he was becoming increasingly anxious. To combat this, Payne worked with his parents on a simplification regime, specifically one that limited James's involvement in his parents' intellectual lives and the bombardment of overwhelmingly negative world events. Within the first couple of weeks of implementing this regime, James was already showing major signs of improvement. His anxiety level had gone down, and his sleep had improved. His play life also began to expand. His pickiness about food waned, and James started making friends with some kids in the neighborhood. Now, Payne will be the first to tell us that there isn't just one thing that helped James overcome his anxiety and controlling behaviors, but the series of steps that his parents took to preserve his childhood certainly had some profound effects. By simplifying our children's lives, we pave the way for positive change and growth. And this preparation is particularly important as we continue to live in a world characterized by too much. Quote, "We are building our daily lives and our families on the four pillars of too much stuff, too many choices, too much information, and too much speed." End quote. This level of distraction, clutter, and busyness robs kids of the time they need to explore their worlds and, most importantly, themselves. In short, our society is waging an undeclared war on childhood. Adult life is flooding into their little lives unchecked, leaving many children suffering from what Payne has coined CSR, or cumulative stress reaction. This refers to the reaction of a pattern of small, constant stresses that may continue to build but never dissipate. Let's be clear. Payne isn't talking about the inevitable, healthy level of stress that is just a natural part of life as a human being. He's talking about the stress that comes from a daily life that is not very different from the one we lead as adults. Quote, "A daily life submerged in the same media-rich, multitasking, complex, information-overloaded, time-pressured waters as our own," end quote. This pace of life is increasingly misaligned with the pace of childhood. When we ask our kids to keep up with a sped-up world, Payne tells us we are unconsciously doing them harm. We're depriving them of well-being and resiliency, the two things they need to ultimately make it in this world. But fortunately, there are things we can do as parents to protect our children's childhoods. Now that we see why it's important to simplify, it's time to find out how. But before we get into the nitty-gritty details of the process, Payne first urges us to reconnect with the dreams we have for our families, particularly how we imagined our families before we had children. He tells us that it's important to reclaim these images because these are the images that will guide us through the work ahead. the next big thought is soul fever and its cure. Quote, simplification is about stripping away the distractions and clutter that monopolize our attention and threaten our connection. End quote. The first part of peeling away the stresses that can overwhelm our children's well-being is developing the ability to recognize when our children are overwhelmed. When kids are being rushed along with too much speed and stress, they can develop what Payne calls an emotional or soul fever. As parents, we develop an instinctual sense of what to do when our kids are sick. It's a combination of our own childhood memories, a little science, a lot of compassion, and even some parental adrenaline. We learn how best to comfort and support them through every cough, fever, rash, or whatever other nasty ailments they may succumb to. With a simple touch of their forehead, we know immediately when our children are suffering from a fever. The physical signs are unmistakable, and our caretaking commences. We draw our children close and suspend their normal routines. In short, we simplify their lives until the fever has subsided. Just as physical ailments are inevitable for our kids, so too is soul fever. They're upset, overwhelmed, and most of all, at odds with their truest selves. But what can we do about it? Payne says it's actually pretty simple. We should respond the same way we respond when they have a physical fever. We simplify. Here are a few steps Payne teaches us to help us recognize and care for a soul fever. Noticing. Typically, we'll need to see a few signs of inner turmoil in our children to identify a soul fever. This will go beyond the general and occasional bad mood. It will last longer, and we'll notice our kids taking more than a couple of steps towards their quirkier tendencies. They'll become bothered by little things. Their sleep patterns will change, and their emotional switch will have a hair trigger sensitivity. It can sometimes be difficult, but the first step to curing a soul fever is noticing it. The next step is quieting things down. Okay, so now that we've noticed that something is definitely going on, just as with a physical fever, the next step is to stop regular routines. Oftentimes, one restful, simplified weekend is enough to break a soul fever. The next step is bringing them close. Just as with a physical fever, emotionally feverish kids need some special care. They need to be brought close, literally and figuratively, and we need to reassure them of our presence and availability. Quote, when we change the routine and quiet things down, we are placing an unspoken emphasis on relationship, connection, end quote. The next step is letting it run its course. Every soul fever has its own lifespan. Simplifying our kids' lives is not to try to control or bypass the emotional turmoil, and it's not a bribe. Instead, in acknowledging their discomfort and drawing them close, we offer them support to get through what's bothering them at their own pace. The final step is a slow, strong return. It's not hard to tell when the storm has passed. Our child returns in all of their brightness and glory. Children emerge from a soul fever stronger and more resilient than before, and with each passing fever, they will learn something new. The next big idea is environment, simplifying their world. Quote, kids don't need many toys to play or any particular one. What they need most of all is unstructured time. End quote. Now for the nitty-gritty stuff. It's time for us to dig into what Payne calls the four layers of simplification. The first is environment. Let's all take a second to picture our children's rooms, or to get up and actually go look at them. Chances are the vast majority of us will see a whole bunch of stuff. Their rooms are full of it. Payne makes an interesting argument here. He contends that too much stuff leads to too many choices, and too many choices are distractions from the natural growth of early childhood. To say our kids are busy is an understatement. Their development in the first 10 years of their life makes what we do as adults look like we're standing stock still. Quote, children need time to become themselves through play and social interaction. If you overwhelm a child with stuff, with choices and pseudo-choices, before they're ready, they will only know one emotional gesture, more. End quote. In his years of experience, Payne has come up with some basic guidelines for how to reduce the amount of stuff we have in our homes. He focuses specifically on the amount of toys our kids have, but emphasizes that the simplification must be unilateral across the whole household. The primary goal of simplifying the toys in our homes is to reduce the quantity and the complexity. The first step is the discard pile. Payne details a 10-point checklist for knowing what to discard. Here it is. Broken toys, developmentally inappropriate toys, conceptually fixed toys, toys that do too much and break too easily, very high stimulation toys, annoying or offensive toys, toys that claim to give kids a developmental edge, toys we're pressured to buy, toys that inspire corrosive play, and toy multiples. By simplifying our children's playthings, we also simplify our parental duties. We don't have to stimulate or control our child's play. It usually works out better if we just get out of their way. This leaves their play open-ended and allows them to make choices and decisions that are theirs to make. These same principles apply to any type of clutter we find in our kids' rooms, clothes, books, even the scent and lighting. By simplifying our children's environments, especially at home, we curb the excess that can threaten childhood's natural rhythms. The next big thought is called rhythm, simplifying their flow. Quote, just as night is replaced by day, children learn that there are movements and changes that, with their regularity, can be counted on. End quote. When Payne asks parents to describe a typical day in their household, more often than not, they respond with, well, there is no typical day. Chances are most of us can relate. Quote, life today for most families is characterized more by randomness and improvisation than rhythm. End quote. Our schedules change and evolve in ways that often make it difficult for us to keep up or keep straight. We create the rhythms of our child's lives, and as these patterns become less natural and regular, they reach well beyond a child's sensory world. Rhythm is so important for kids because they learn that some movements and changes can be counted on, like the fact that day becomes night and night becomes day again. This predictability gives children a sense of security, one that allows them to venture out and explore because they know that they will return safe. But children don't only find security in the rhythms of everyday life, they begin to find them in themselves. Having some set high notes, like meal times, bath times, play times, children can see where they fit into all the family's comings and goings. Payne gives us one particularly good tip here. It's not always easy to adhere to a set rhythm. Things come up that can't be avoided. But the key is to make sure that we surprise our kids as little as possible. He uses an example of a 3-year-old deeply engrossed in her play. The child's mom knows that they will have to leave in 20 minutes to pick up dad at the airport. How does she deal with this? Does she wait until the very last minute and then grab and go? Payne says absolutely not. He says the best way to limit surprises is to simply warn kids. In this situation, the other could simply say, "Sweetheart, pretty soon we'll have to clean up the toys and go pick up daddy. Not now, but in a few minutes." These little advanced notices help prime children for variations in the routine and can really increase security and ease. The next big thought is schedules, simplifying their agenda. Quote, overall, there is less free time for kids today, as much as 12 hours a week less. End quote. The third layer of simplification is schedules. Payne begins this discussion with some cold, hard facts. On average, kids spend about 8 hours more in school every week than they did in 1981. The amount of time they spend in structured activities doubled between 1981 and 1997, from 11% to 22%. And this is probably even higher now. In 1981, kids spent about 52 minutes every week on homework. A 2006 poll of parents showed that kids now spend an average of an hour and 20 minutes every night on homework. Needless to say, kids don't have as much free time as they used to. But is being busy really so bad? Payne, not surprisingly, says it is. Quote, just as too many toys may stifle creativity, too many scheduled activities may limit a child's ability to direct themselves, to fill their own time, to find and follow their own path. That thing we said earlier about not trying to control or stimulate our children's play also applies here. Kids need unstructured time. They need time to do nothing, to get bored and figure out a way to fix it by themselves. Payne uses the analogy of fertilizer. In the early 1950s, farmers began using chemical fertilizers to increase productivity and have greater control over their fields. Enriching the soil meant farmers were able to specialize, and it meant greater outputs in a shorter amount of time. This is how we as parents often see our children's soccer practices and music lessons. We see these activities as a way to enrich their lives and broaden their horizons. But enriching the soil has its consequences. Over-fertilization leads to exhausted, depleted soil. Excess fertilizer doesn't soak in. It runs off and pollutes surrounding water resources. The same can be said about our kids. There are costs to controlling their schedules. Quote, activity without downtime is ultimately like a plant without roots, unsustainable. End quote. The solution? Payne suggests sustainable crop rotation, or in other words, balance and interdependence. A crop's yield depends on soil that's been rested and soil that's been aerated by a cover crop. For kids, rest breeds creativity. Creativity cultivates activity. Activity nurtures rest, and rest sustains creativity. Every piece of the puzzle is interdependent. So how do we rest and oxygenate our children's inner soil? Awareness is the first big step. Recognizing the value of free time and creative time means we'll make space for them. When we honor the importance of unscheduled time for our kids to do nothing, we'll start to open up their schedules and we'll start to simplify. The next big thought, minimizing worry and filtering out the adult world. Quote, we can harness the power of less, end quote. The fourth and final layer of simplification is filtering out the adult world. In a session with one of his clients, Payne asked a woman to choose one word to describe her experience of motherhood. She chose worry. For all of us who have kids, we know what she's talking about. Quote, worry and concern are sewn into the cloth of parenting. They are integral parts of the experience. End quote. While worry is most certainly an aspect of parenting, it should not be at the top of our list of definitions. It seems that now our worries so overshadow our hopes and dreams for our children and our trust of them. In today's parenting landscape, fear casts a long shadow over trust. Trust in our children's emerging self-awareness, in their world, their development, and even our own parental instincts. Up to this point, we've learned that simplifying our children's lives allows them to be a real child. It also just so happens to be the best way to restore balance to parenting. It allows our connection to our kids and the values we hold most dear to reign supreme, to rise above all the other clutter and acceleration. The final key to allowing our kids to recapture their childhood is about us. It's about us as parents erecting filters to keep our child's world from being flooded with grown-up information, pressures, and worries. One critical way of doing this is by simplifying the screens in our home and cutting down on television, computer, and tablet time. This greatly diminishes our kids' exposure to adult things like consumerism, violence, and other negative cultural influencers, and it greatly increases their capacity for imagination and resourcefulness. We also must learn to be a base camp, not a helicopter. We should provide our kids with a sense of security that ideally will serve them the rest of their lives. We need to be the hand on the back of the bicycle after the training wheels have been removed, calming and supportive. But we can't let our concerns and anxieties hijack our base camp. When we do this, we board the helicopter and become the oh-so-loathed helicopter parent. And finally, Payne encourages us to shut our mouths once in a while and listen to our kids. Quote, when we talk over and under and around a child, when we talk too much, there's less space for their thoughts and for what they have to say. End quote. We stifle their growth and creativity, and we interrupt their play. As we've seen throughout the entirety of this book, less is more. So there we have it. Kim John Payne's powerful strategies for bringing fresh inspiration and attention to the flow of family life to add a little more grace and space to our daily lives. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to sharing with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.